The last case on our calendar is 06492, Dayton Montgomery County Port Authority versus Montgomery County Board of Revision et al. Mr. Sleggs.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court, my name is Todd Sleggs and I represent the appellant Dayton Montgomery Port Authority. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Your time there.
This case comes to the court from the Ohio Board of Tax Appeals and involves a office building in Dayton, Ohio that was constructed by the Dayton Montgomery County Port Authority. And the construction was completed in around the end of August of 2002, and the assessment date in this case is January 1 of 2003. The reason why the Port Authority filed a complaint with the Board of Revision in this case is that the cost factor that was applied by the county to their reproduction cost new calculation dramatically increased the assessment of the property beyond the Port Authority's actual cost to build the building. So we went before the Board of Revision, submitted the actual costs, and I would note for the benefit of the court that the Port Authority is not a real estate developer. They contracted, and the contracts are in the record in this case, with a third-party developer, identified as Shook in the record, to actually build this building. And Tom Pfister testified at the Board of Revision that this was a turnkey deal. So the Port Authority went to Shook and said, design us and build us a building, and we're going to fill it up with tenants so that we can increase the tax base for Montgomery County.
Council, can you help me understand where the 1.6 came from? I couldn't really see in the briefs. I mean, they kept talking about applying this factor. Was this something accepted in the real estate industry? Was it some? Where did this come from? Why was it 1.6, not 1.3, 1.8, 2.4?
That's an excellent question, Your Honor. And the mass appraiser was at the hearing before the Board of Revision, and she testified that this was a factor that she applied because of the type of building. She felt it was a better building than what the cost.
So it's something that she, in her experience, assessed and determined would be a proper factor, but it's not a standard-wide industry factor that's commonly applied in situations like this?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that was one of our problems with the county valuation in this case, is that there really isn't any market substantiation of that 1.6 grade factor. And moreover, if you look at their reproduction costs new, which is in the supplement at page 19, it's just a tad under $12 million. Our costs were just a tad under $14 million, and those costs included certain things like demolition, some asbestos removal, and some soil work at the site. So, and that was those three items were about $1.2 million. If you pull those out, you know, we're within about $1,800,000 of the county's reproduction cost new. It's only when this 1.6 grade factor comes in that we that this disparity in the assessment results.
There was no expert testimony offered to undermine the validity of the schedule that was adopted by the county auditor, either at the Board of Revision or at the Board of Tax Appeals.
No, Your Honor. We felt that by submitting our actual cost information that was really the best evidence of what the asset was worth because the construction was so recent in time to our tax lien date. The construction was completed in August. It started in 2001 by Mr. Pfister's testimony. It was completed. That last construction draw was dated August of 2002, so probably the payments and some minor punch items might have carried on into the fall, but essentially the actual costs were so recent in time to the tax lien date that we felt that that would be a sufficient evidence to rebut the county's application of this 1.6 grade factor.
Although if you were to contract on December 31st for the construction of that building, the cost would probably be higher than what was actually constructed when it was already in running and contracted for several years already, wouldn't it?
Well, it's hard to say, Your Honor. I think the cost of materials kind of fluctuates over time. I think recently we've seen costs for concrete escalate. They'll probably come down. So it's conceivable that, you know, raw materials could have been less expensive by the time we rolled forward to January 1 of 2003. But in terms of the recentness of the cost information, I think particularly in the sales area, for market information, this court and the Board of Tax Appeals has recognized that if the cost information or the sale is within a year or two of the tax lien date, that it's considered to be probative evidence of value in the case. And we felt that our costs were sufficiently recent that we didn't need to have an appraiser go to a cost service to confirm that. Moreover, our actual costs were very close to the replacement cost new that the county calculated. We really weren't arguing about what the replacement cost new would be. It was just this unsubstantiated 1.6 grade factor. And our case really is that we feel it's unfair to take our actual costs and then apply this 1.6 factor and tax us on. I mean, it's really, in our opinion, taxing us on something that's not there. We certainly didn't pay that additional 60% premium for the bricks and sticks.
That's what I was going to ask you. The 1.6 translates into adding 60% to the value. Is that correct? That's correct.
What does that work out to tax-wise on an annual basis?
Just using, say, a 2% tax rate, which when we look at tax rates around the state, it's about 2% of value. That additional 60% probably works out to about $120,000 a year in taxes.
And the Board of Tax Appeals, in their opinion, is critical of your witness because of soft costs, whatever that is. What on earth are they talking about that isn't included? You address what I would assume would be soft costs, architectural fees and
yes.
Design and those kind of things, and you indicate it was a package deal, as you indicated here, a turnkey operation, and the contractor that put the building up paid the architect and all of that. What else are they talking about?
I don't know, Your Honor, and if you go to Mr. Pfister's testimony before the Board of Revision.
But that seems to be the legal basis on which they threw it out. I mean, essentially, they said, if I understand from a legal standpoint, you can do the market approach, the sales approach.
That's correct.
You can do the income approach.
Correct.
Or you can do the cost approach. So those are the three allowed approaches. You chose cost. They're not critical of that, and the Dayton School Board isn't critical of that. And there are some good reasons for that in this case. So you use the cost approach. Your every witness testifies to the costs, and they, as they have the right to do or do in certain circumstances, just said, we're going to ignore it. We don't believe your witness. And they did that on the basis of soft costs, is the way I read their opinion. Is that right or wrong?
Well, Your Honor, we feel that's wrong, and we do cite to page four in the supplement.
Is that what they use as the basis for throwing it out, though?
Yes, I believe that is correct, Your Honor. I think they were uncomfortable with the cost information. I don't understand why, because what they do at page 6 and 7 in the opinion is they go into citing another opinion of theirs that talks about all these different types of costs. But if the court looks at the record in this case, particularly page 4 in the supplement, you'll see the soft costs that are discussed in the PTA decisions, in the appraisal texts that they cite, as well as the Ohio Administrative Code rules. I mean, Shook was the designer and the builder of this. You've got almost $1 million in general conditions, which were all the operational expenses that Shook would have had to build this, as well as their profit. $840,000 in design fees, which I assume would have been the architects, and then, you know, it goes on and on. Architect fees, engineering permits, all the types of costs that you see discussed.
Well, then the other thing lurking about in all of this is this discussion of there should be an allowance for a profit factor. That's in the appellee's brief. I'm not understanding that as to why that's required in the cost approach to determining under the statute. What we're trying to determine here is the, what's the legal term for the value?
True value in money.
True value.
That's correct. As far as entrepreneurial profit go, I would submit two items for the court's consideration. One, entrepreneurial profit is not specifically addressed in the Ohio Administrative Code. It isn't addressed in the appraisal of real estate. I cited the Elyria decision by the Board of Tax Appeals because even the Board of Tax Appeals recognized that with respect to a specific property, entrepreneurial profit may not exist. It could be positive, negative, it could be zero.
And here it's zero because you did a financing or a lease that covers your financing costs, right?
Well, Your Honor, I think it's zero for two reasons. One, as Mr. Pfister testified, the purpose of this project was to create jobs and income tax revenues for Montgomery County. And so he said we had, as the real developer of this property, we had no expectation of entrepreneurial profit. But even if you look at the facts in the case, the county, in their record card at pages 20 through 24 of the supplement, did an income approach, which would be one way to look to see if there was entrepreneurial profit, which is if you looked at the income stream for this property and the value was greater than what it cost you to do to build it. Their income approach value was $6,095,040. And I think that supports Mr. Pfister's testimony that there was no entrepreneurial profit in this.
So if you use the income approach, the value is half of what you say it is.
You're correct, Your Honor. And these are the exact facts of the Amsdell case that I argued before this court 12 years ago. The income approach valuation in the Amsdell case was about, there were two fellows that testified. One was around $600,000. Another fellow using a different methodology was around $700,000. The costs were $1,305,000. And so in that particular instance, again, we had very recent construction. The court directed the Board of Tax Appeals to assess the property on remand based upon the cost of the property.
So the county auditor, in addition to doing the cost analysis, did the income analysis and came up with a much lower. Did they also do a market approach comparable sales analysis?
No. The record card does not contain any consideration.
So it probably weren't any.
But yeah, when we go back to this particular time period, and I think the reason why this particular development was undertaken by the Port Authority is because there just wasn't a lot of development activity in downtown at that time. This particular property was developed on a site that was formerly a Sears store. We are asking the court in our brief for some guidance, and I even suggest in our brief a bright line rule with respect to cost information. And I have mentioned several times that this case involved recent actual costs. Looking at sales information in recent cases, this court and the Board of Tax Appeals have been talking about recent arm's length sales. And I think that those cases provide real guidance to parties and litigants before the county boards and the Board of Tax Appeals. And I think in this particular case, the court has an opportunity when looking at recent actual cost information to provide guidance not only to the Board of Tax Appeals, but also to the county boards of revision with respect to the assessment of real property in Ohio. And for that reason, I would respectfully request that the court reverse the Board of Tax Appeals decision and order in this case and instruct them to value the property based upon the actual cost.
One other fact, there was a difference on the land value, and I believe you stipulate in your brief that your client is willing to agree to the higher value on the land itself.
Yeah, we never contested the land value in this case, and just for the court's benefit, we have about 33,000 square feet of land. It's about 3/4 of an acre. The county, the original county value of $316,000 works out to about $400,000 an acre. What the Board of Revision did in their decision was they took the land value back to the 2001 pre-update value. Why they did that, I don't know, but we've never contested the land value before the Board of Revision or in our appeal before the Board of Tax Appeals. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sliggs. Mr. DiMuzio.
May it please the court. This issue before us today as to whether or not the actual construction costs ought to govern the valuation of real property has been before this court before. We cite the case of Webb Henn, 1995 Ohio Supreme Court case. In that case, this court held, and I'll read a few phrases from it in a minute, it was faced with the issue of the appellant asserting that the construction costs were new. They gave all the construction costs in that case, and this court ruled that it's not going to be bound by the actual construction costs, that there could be other factors that could influence value. On page 742 of that decision, this court said the following: the fair market value of a property reflects what portion of the cost will be recovered in a sale, not necessarily the actual cost of the project. Indeed, the fair market value may exceed actual costs. It then cites a prior Supreme Court case called Cardinal Federal, quote, in determining the value of property for the purpose of taxation, the tax assessor must take into consideration all factors, all as italicized, which affect the value of property.
Now, but did we say for the cost approach to appraisal, we're not going to accept the actual costs?
No, in that case, what had happened, Your Honor, is the BTA ruled that in that particular case, they didn't feel comfortable with the actual costs reflecting the value. They thought there were other factors, and this court affirmed the BTA's exercise of discretion.
But they didn't do it on the cost approach then. They went to the market approach or the income approach.
No, I don't remember. My recollection, Your Honor, was that the school district in that case was the appellant. They were unhappy that the BTA had adopted a value lower than the actual cost. The Supreme Court issues.
But that involves depreciation and those kinds of things. And most of the cases that you cite and are discussed are older buildings where you get into the depreciation. And isn't that really what this 1/6 is about? For example, here in Columbus, if you go over to High Street, the Huntington Tower is a Class A building built with marble and, you know, it's a classy building. It's now, its actual cost of construction would be out of date, particularly if you applied depreciation to it.
Certainly.
You would come up with a value presumably much lower than the right. than the building's actually worth. And isn't that where this
no.
this fudge factor comes from?
No, Your Honor. In the Webb Henn case, it involved a new construction situation. The school district was upset that the BTA had adopted a price lower than, value lower than the actual construction cost. This court said, not that they didn't care, but they said that they didn't necessarily feel that this bright line test that Mr. Sliggs wants you to adopt is correct. An example the court uses in that case is somebody could construct a building and perhaps make some mistakes or overconstruct or do some other things. You wouldn't necessarily say that by and of itself in a bright line sense always results in value. So I think that was important. What's even?
Yeah, but that was a diminution in the value from the actual
yes.
cost.
So
yes. Where's your case where this court allowed you to take the costs yes. of a brand new building and mark it up by 60%? What case did this court approve that?
Okay. In the actual Webb Henn case, it made the following statement on page 742. Indeed, the fair market value may exceed actual costs. So the courts recognized that before. In this situation, the burden of proof is on the taxpayer to show that this 1.6, this exercise of discretion that the auditor is supposed to do was
wrong.
Where
does that come from? It was asked by Justice Stratton. Where's the 1.6 come from?
It's my understanding is, this is not part of my case, my understanding is that it was located in the field card or one of the property cards at the county level. It's common for, to answer one of the earlier questions, it's common for counties to apply different grade factors to their cost schedules. It's actually provided for, I think, in the Ohio Administrative Code. So it happens all the time, and he may be right. Perhaps it should be 1.2 or 1.4. They did not meet their burden. They did not provide any expert testimony as to what that factor ought to be. To simply say, well, it ought to be one, it sounds good to us, is not proper. They had the burden of proof. By the way, they waived their right to present new evidence at the BTA. They could have corrected that error, and they chose not to do so.
Their burden of proof, over here.
I'm sorry.
Their burden of proof, in my understanding, was that the cost factors include enough soft costs, and they are what they are, and it's unreasonable to up it by 60%. And that's their that's the proof that I see them presenting, because I'm having a very difficult time understanding on what basis this, I mean, that 60% is a heck of a lot of extra value to add to something that's just been built without any support that, other than you're saying it's on a card somewhere. I mean, that's not, that doesn't convince me that this is a reasonable figure to add.
Well, again, the burden is on them. If this court is going to issue a rule that the auditors have to back up at every board of revision hearing, every adjustment that's on their card, I'm sure they would have to hire thousands of more people. The legislature and this court has always held the burden is on the person challenging the auditor's interpretation. They make these sorts of subjective things all the time. Keep in mind, it wasn't the 1.6 to actual, my understanding is it wasn't the 1.6 to the actual cost that was added. It was 1.6 to the cost schedules of what they felt typical costs would be to, you know, build this particular kind of building. There's no exact, you can't go to a book and say, what would it cost to build this building on the Sears site? It doesn't exist, obviously. They have to figure out in their expertise what type of building, what's the level of finish. You can see the finish in this room would not be typical of a building. These are the kinds of expert subjective analysis that is done by an expert, and it wasn't done in this case.
Well, counsel, you're allowed three approaches. The auditor tried two of them, income, and it came out at half of what they put in, and they did a cost approach by going to a book, I guess. There's nothing in the statute that requires the landowner to bring in an appraiser on the cost approach. They brought in the actual costs. What better evidence is there than that of the actual cost than the actual cost? That's what they did. So they really weren't required under the statute or any rule or any decision of this court to bring an appraiser there. They put that in, and the Board of Tax Appeals just rejected it.
My understanding, Your Honor, is that they do have the burden of challenging the county auditor's number. That clearly
and they did
is
that.
Their burden.
Yeah, they had that
they
burden,
came
and
in
they
with
did
a,
that.
And they came in with a non-expert person saying, one sounds good to me. I don't like 1.6.
What
happened.
What better expert as to the cost approach on a brand new building is there than the person who built the building?
First of all, the person who built the building wasn't the one who testified.
Well, he was the construction manager.
I remember, Your Honor, but all I'm saying is
that's what the briefs say.
All right. Is
the construction manager not the person who builds the building? I mean, I'm not talking.
They are
about
the person that built the
building. The bricklayer. I'm talking.
They are the person that built the building. The cost approach is normally the best approach for a newer building. Now, the cost approach doesn't always mean you adopt the actual costs for reasons the court talks about in the Webb Henn case.
What's the cite to that case?
The cite, Your Honor, is 73 Ohio State 3rd, 739. And it is in my brief. It's not in the appellant's brief. It's directly on point. But the point I wanted to make, just to go on for a second, before I go on, the income approach makes no sense at all. You don't use an income approach for a brand new empty building. Simply isn't done. And if you go to the appraisal, so that's a red herring. That's not something this court should put any of relevance on. It's a brand new building built by a port authority, built by a quasi-government agency. You do not use the income approach for that sort of thing. He also talks about how the person that built it, somehow they have built in their contractor profit. He's not the developer. The person that built it is not the developer. The developer is the one that takes the risk. The builder simply signs a contract, in this case, 3 years before the lien date. If you think about inflation, but 3 years before the lien date, they sign the contract and they get paid a contracted amount. They take zero risk. The developer takes the risk. The Dayton Port Authority takes the risk. And the question is, come 03, is this building worth $12 million, $13, $14? What's interesting, if you look at the end of appellant's brief, he's now at about, I think, $14.5 million. So the number jumps around. Is it 12 on the auditor's card? Is it 14 and a half? On them, is it the 13 and a half Mr. Pfister testified to? These numbers jump around. And this court has consistently held that when there's no probative evidence to support a particular value in the record, then we must go back to the original, which is what the BTA held, must go back to the original effects data.
Mr. Sleggs argues, if I understand his position correctly, that in line with our decision in the Amsdell case, a case is somewhat similar factually. A newer building with the cost of construction, we said the evidence before the board established the true value of the property was no more than its acquisition and construction costs. And I think what he's doing is reasoning by analogy here, saying if that was the holding in the Amsdell case, then why shouldn't it be the holding, and why shouldn't this court apply the same logic and reasoning and utilize the actual construction costs here and forget about the 1.6 multiplier, sure, or forget about replacement cost or some other? If we've set up the law, we ought to follow it.
Three responses, Your Honor. One is the Webb Hen case is actually much more on point. That deals with a specific issue in situations where the evidence doesn't support the actual cost being the best cost. What should this court do?
Let me just.
And there was evidence in your case, Your Honor, to support that. There's not in this record.
There's no evidence to support the actual cost in this case?
No, there's evidence to support it. There's no evidence to support that that's the best evidence of value or that that's the market value. It's simply raw data. I haven't gotten to the second part of the argument, which is that
Let me just keep you right where I have you for the moment, so I understand what you're arguing to us. If we said in Amsdell that the true value is the acquisition and construction cost, why wouldn't we say the acquisition and construction cost here would be the same? That's my question.
Because there was evidence in the Amsdell case to support that conclusion.
And that's what I said to you. Is there no evidence of the construction cost in this case? Is that your position?
No, there's evidence of the construction cost. There's no evidence that the construction cost is the fair market value. That's a huge distinction. That's why Webb Hen makes more sense. Webb Hen says, let the BTA look at these nuances. Let the BTA look at the 1.6 and the 1.2. That's what they do. Let them, in their expertise, look at this. And this court is not going to disturb that as long as there's a reasonable
basis.
Counsel,
I just have to call you out on Webb Hen. That's an apartment complex that was in the middle of construction. I mean, that case doesn't apply to this case any more than the man in the moon in terms of the problems the BTA was facing. And they're talking about, while you're in the middle of construction, architects' costs that went to the whole project may have been expended. The complexities of valuing a big multi-unit apartment complex being appraised for value in the middle of construction without occupancy is a whole different matter than this. I mean, it's certainly not useful to us trying to understand what's the right thing to do here to trot that case out.
Your Honor, there are actually Ohio statutes that do talk about what should be done in this situation. 57-1501, and I quote, all facts and circumstances relating to the value of the property, all, not just some, not that you've decided to cherry pick. 57-1301B requires the auditor to assess in accordance with the rules adopted by the tax commissioner. Now, both Webb Hen case and I cite in my brief, it turns out I've discovered this when I prepared for today's argument, what are the old designations of the regulations, 5705. It turns out it's now called 5703-25-12B. It talks about all building costs are to be used in the cost schedules. It specifically mentions overhead and profit. And it indicates that the prices should be based upon labor, materials, and other charges from the year just prior. In our case, there was no actual cost of the land. If you look in the record, you won't see any reference to the actual cost of the land.
The land's not in dispute, so why are we talking about it?
It is in my, I suppose you could decide which cost, which actual cost ought to be.
They have conceded the higher dollar value.
I don't, Your Honor. I mean, I don't understand. I think they have an obligation to say, we're going to pick, you know, certain ones are bright line and certain costs aren't bright line. You know, you can't have it both ways. The entire value is in dispute in these cases as soon as they appeal it or complain about it. and they have not given us that. They
so you want the you want us to award the lower value on the land?
No, Your Honor. I think that they had the burden of coming up with the probative value. They haven't done that. They haven't given us the actual cost of the land. That's all I'm saying. It was zero. That was the actual cost of the land. Should that become the value? Or some other, you know, if it's some other number, suddenly we like the auditor's subjective, you know, determination.
You can stipulate things out of any case.
Stipulation's a two-way street, Your Honor. We haven't stipulated. So, you know, I guess that'd be my response. And secondly, the most important soft cost here is this entrepreneurial profit. This court routinely cites the appraisal of real estate as being, they don't call it the Bible, but it is the key work. We now know that the Ohio Administrative Code talks about building in profit. There is no profit built into this at all. Nobody in the real world spends $12, $13, $14 million, takes all the risk attendant with that, borrows money, takes all the risk, and sells it for that $12 or $13 million.
Was anything put in the record by the auditor regarding the 1.6, the source of that?
No, Your Honor, not that I'm familiar with. I'm not the attorney for the auditor, but no, I'm not familiar with it. That's all I had, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Going back to what Justice Pfeiffer just said, Webb Henn specifically says the decision of the BTA is to set forth step by step how it arrived at its final value. And I think there are several of us here who are concerned about this 1.6 number that was added, and that doesn't appear to have support in the record.
My recollection, Your Honor, is the 1.6 was actually in the record. It was something that was argued as support for Mr. Slegs's position. It wasn't something that was put forth by the auditor. It was already in the record. I think he cross-examined the mass appraiser at the BOR. It was not something they put forward. It was something that was in there already. And he chose not at the BTA. He could have come to the BTA, hired an appraiser, and said the 1.6 makes no sense.
Did you look at the video of the, that's the record, isn't it? It's a video of the Board of Revision.
Yeah, I don't think there was a video. I think there was a tape, is my recollection.
Well, whatever. Did you look at that, listen to it?
I think it was, I either listened to it or it's been transcribed. I forget which. But yes, Your Honor, I have.
And there was a, there was evidence presented as to the source of the 1.6?
My recollection, it was this field card, Your Honor. It's been a while since I've looked at that.
In other words, somebody testified, here's the value, and the auditor got there by multiplying it by 1.6.
Yes, and it wasn't.
That's the extent of it.
Yes, and it wasn't the construction cost that was multiplied by 1.6. It was the cost schedule that was multiplied by 1.6.
Understood that.
Okay. So we've got all these different numbers out there, and we know there's no entrepreneurial profit. We know that for a fact. You'll see no evidence. You'll see no evidence of any administrative costs. So what they did, unlike Webb Henn, where they gave all the costs and this court rejected it. Here they've given less than all the costs. They've decided which costs they're going to give and not give. And on something of this magnitude, something with 13, 14, 15 million, if we accept their numbers, it defies logic that somebody would put that amount of money into a project, take millions and millions and millions of dollars in risk, and not expect a profit, and expect it's going to be worth exactly what they paid for it.
You've used your time, Mr. DiMuzio.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Slegs, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. The only evidence in the record of the 1.6 grade factor adjustment is page 19 in the supplement, and that's what it is. It's just they take 1.6 and they apply it to their replacement cost new, which is about $12 million, $11,936,463. I asked the mass appraiser where it came from, and she said, and this is in the tape of the Board of Revision hearing, that she felt because of the type of building that there should have been an adjustment to the replacement cost new. I don't consider that to be an adequate basis to support the auditor's assessment in this case. I think it is reasonable when you have a case like this, because we had the record card. When we got our assessment, we pulled the record card, we looked at it, we said, boy, they're almost right on the money on the replacement cost new, but what's this 1.6? That's our whole case here today, is why are we having to live with this 1.6? As the court noted, Webb Henn deals with a discount to actual construction costs when the property is partially complete. And as Judge O'Donnell noted, Amstel Company did not involve an appraisal. We had the developer come in, same fact pattern, these are my costs. Thank you.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.